following program is brought to you by your friends at Podcast One.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Corolla Classics for August 2nd, 2020. Happy Sunday. You know how the show goes. We're going to play you some great Adam Carolla Show clips over the 11 plus years of podcasting. Over 2,800 podcasts. I'll have to confirm that with the other guy in just a sec. My name is Chris Loxamana, executive producer of the Adam Carolla Show. And with me, as always, Corolla archivist, super fan Giovanni.
Affirmative.
Affirmative. He agrees. That's a lot of pod.
Approaching 2,900, and then it'll be 3,000 episodes, and then Rich Banks will have to record another song that hopefully he's already writing.
Yeah, because he has a lot more to cover. A whole other 1,000 podcasts. I don't know what you're going to do. I can't think of a better song than 2,000 podcasts.
You're just going to have to do, he's done 3,000 podcasts.
Just change the chorus. There's so much. Yeah. There's so many other things that we've had happen.
Yeah.
It's all right.
Some of them are good.
They're all great. Stop. Anyway, let's get going with some clips. Oh, before we do, actually, I want to remind everybody that the Corolla Show is off this week. So Monday and Tuesday, we're going to play you guys the San Antonio live shows. But after that, the Gio and Chris take over.
Indeed.
Brace yourselves.
We got 3 episodes airing during the dark week, and then the regular episode airing for Saturday. And then, of course, another episode next Sunday in this feed, just like this very episode.
Oh, yeah. And we're doing Monday of next week, too.
So, oh, sweet.
Yeah, look at us. All right, let's get going with a clip, though. This one features, it's a little supercut. We have Jessamay Peluso and the late, great Super Dave Osborne.
Super Dave Foner, it's Adam Carolla Show 1302, some of Jessamay's interview. She's currently doing Bong in a movie on YouTube. She's been on the show. People know her from other appearances on other podcasts. It's from 2014. Check it out.
So we all hustled into the Bugatti room and put the Newman dock in, and I had a nice glass of Mangria in my hand, and we started it, and we got about 37 minutes in, and there's a point where they're talking about Paul Newman, the Joker, and we're interviewing Arthur Newman, his older brother, believe it or not, and talking about throwing his hat up in the air that he hated. And Newman shot it with a shotgun. And when the shotgun sound went off, everything blew. Boom. Everything shut down.
Oh, like blue speakers.
And
oh,
then
no.
Leno sat there and tried to get his AV guy on the phone 10 times. And everyone tried everything. And we all just sat there. And then and he was like, do we have Mox and landline? I have a cell phone. We have his landline. And then I was like, I just texted him. And I just realized, we're all just at the mercy of the fucking AV guy. And I've told you, it's the white man's burden. If you've talked to any celebrity, they'll tell you they got an AV guy. They gave you a box. They said you push a button. The curtains close. The thing comes down. The surround sound kicks up. And then at some point, they've invited a bunch of people over. It's a Friday night, and they can't get the fucking hold of this nerd. Look, I'm going to tell Sonny, look, go gay and just get marry an AV nerd. Or you be the gay one. Oh, no, wait a minute.
Or just have
you
be the nerd. AV nerd.
Yeah, and then marry a rich guy. Like, whatever it is, that person just needs to be in-house. They just need it. Call them. We all sat there. Everyone loved the doc. It was all full of the car guys. Some of the guys had been there back in the days. They're all loving it. We're 37 minutes in, and we all have to just stand up and go, all right, It's time to leave. And we all just got up and left. Like that. That was that. Just blew the speakers.
Went out with a bang.
Couldn't get them going. We all just left. Super Dave is on the phone. Super Dave Osborne.
How are you?
Good to speak to you.
It's good to speak to you.
When Jews Were Funny is the name of the new film Super Dave is involved with. I heard you.
I just heard a newsflash. Can I interrupt you for a second?
Sure.
They think they found the black box at Coachella.
At Coachella?
Yes. They're flying over there now.
Wow. I heard you talking to Dennis Miller, doing a very stilted interview with Dennis Miller as I was driving home from the Peterson Museum on a Wednesday night.
It was unusual.
I didn't hear the part where he'd cut you off. I just heard the part where you guys argued over whether he should have cut you off or not, because he didn't want to get into trouble. But I don't know.
There was no way it was in trouble. I repeated a quote from a Fox anchor, a lady who said, "The Connecticut women just won the NAACP championship."
Oh, right. Right.
Which is fantastic.
As a fan, when you're a comedian, you wait for moments like this.
Oh my God. But the thing is, it was such a truism.
Yes.
I mean, you cannot deny that the greatest players in the history of basketball have been black.
Well, watch it there. Watch it now. Watch it now, Super.
Sharunas Marshallonis is pissed.
Yeah. You're getting into some very dangerous territory there. And very controversial. Yeah, I know.
Yeah, right.
And I think Dennis Miller, who would love to talk about anything at any time, realizes he's on terrestrial radio and living in the real world, and he's somehow going to get sucked up into whatever controversy Super Dave spat out. And so he kind of clipped Super Dave, and then it became this whole thing about why didn't you let him finish, and then Super Dave came back and ended up talking about When Jews Were Funny, which is just chalk filled with the Howie Mandels and the Rodney Dangerfield and the Gilbert Gottfrieds and all the Jackie Mason and David Brenner, the late, great David Brenner and Shecky Green, all the folks like that. But I heard you saying that you were being interviewed by the fella that was making the documentary and you guys got into it.
Well, we didn't really get into it. It's just that I had never met the gentleman, and I agreed to do it because the guy that was producing it is a longtime friend of mine, Perry Rosemont. And he worked on Bizarre and Super Dave in Canada, and he asked me to do this. So I said, okay. So the director came to my house, and he was a completely unmade bed. I mean, he looked at me like he had slept in his clothes for about a month.
Right.
And he would ask me a question, and the minute he finished asking it, I would look at him and start to answer, and he was reading the next question to himself.
Right, right. Wasn't
so
listening.
I kind of got on him a little bit, but it turned out very funny because they left it in the movie.
What's going on with Curb Your Enthusiasm? Is that ever
it's
coming
so
back?
It's so disappointing. It's so disappointing.
I love you in that.
Oh, thank you so much. But I don't think we're doing it anymore.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It really is disappointing. I called up Larry and left him a message that I wish he didn't have a dime. So he'd be
I know.
Forced to do it.
Well, that's the problem. When guys are rich, they have F you money. And as I've said, the ultimate is F me money, meaning
exactly.
He has so much money, forget about fucking over other people. He can fuck himself.
He can fuck himself over. He can fuck his family over. It doesn't matter.
That's
he
right.
He can't spend it.
Right.
And the problem is there's no pressure. And we only did 10 shows a year. My whole life I did 26 shows a year. And
right.
That was hard. But 10 shows a year, and it was all ad lib, and it was completely, it was just a blast. And I'm really sorry we didn't do two more years.
I was hearing you talk on Dennis Miller's show about your father being a great stand-up comedian and doing a roast and physically passing away, dying up on the dais during a roast.
Lucille Ball Desjardins, yes, Lucille Ball Desjardins roast. And my dad was completely, he was brilliant. And he was a dialect comedian, and he had a character named Park Your Carcass, who was an owner of a Greek restaurant. and he had had physical problems when he was I think when I was 7 years old, he had an operation on his spine, and excuse me, and they severed an artery, and in cauterizing it, they paralyzed him.
Wow.
So it took him many years to learn to walk again. But in 1957, he had signed to do a television show. And he went over to the Beverly Hilton Hotel. It was a Lucille Ball, Desi Arnaz roast. Everyone was on the panel. Jack Benny, George Burns, Milton Berle. I mean, everybody. And my dad.
Can you imagine how much smoke was in that room? Single human being was drinking scotch and smoking.
Well, Old Gold sponsored my dad's radio show.
Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Yeah. And no, I'm sure you couldn't even see the stage.
Right.
And he sat down and died of a heart attack after he killed the audience.
So he went up and just knocked it out of the park. Went back and sat down and died.
And died from a heart attack at 54 years old.
Because of all the smoke.
And I heard about it on a clock radio in the morning that woke me up.
Jesus Christ.
I know, that's what I said. I mean, that was a shovel in the face.
Headline, Super Dave's dad dies on dais.
A heart attack.
Jesus Christ. What was that like? So you were living where at the time?
In Beverly Hills.
And you just hear it like, you know, it's not.
Yeah, because it happened in the middle of the night.
Right, for you.
I mean, they worked on him all night. So mm-hmm. I didn't know where. I just slept through it. And I get up at 7 in the morning and from a clock radio, and the news, they led with the news. Harry Parker-Carcus Einstein dies of a heart attack. That's what I heard.
Jesus. And, of course, people don't know why Albert Brooks is Super Dave's brother. And then, isn't Shy Day your brother's other brother?
No, it was Daly and Associates.
Daly and Associates. Is Daly still going strong at, a place that does all the ad stuff?
Advertising.
Like advertising, yeah. Ad agency. Is that still going strong?
I don't know, really. Mm. I'm not sure. Cliff is kind of retired. He doesn't do very much for them anymore.
That's why Albert Brooks would always be an ad guy in his comedies, because I think he would shoot at Cliff's place. Like, it was always Ford and the account. I mean, Daly had Ford, right?
Right. Right.
So it made sense that you would just go over to your other brother's place and shoot away.
Of course, and use it.
Is Cliff here in town?
Yes.
I've said many times, in terms of diversity, I know your dad passed at a young age, but in terms of him being proud, one of your sons is Super Dave Osborne, the other is Albert Brooks, and the other is Cliff Einstein, who started one of the biggest ad agencies in the world.
Range.
And he had another son, Charles Einstein, who was a brilliant writer, and worked for the San Francisco Examiner and did all the books on Willie Mays, and he was really brilliant, too.
But
my dad never lived to see any of it.
Yeah, please tell me there's a fifth brother, Chet, who works at a batting cage in Reseda and is still there to this day.
Yes, and he has three breasts.
That's what I'm talking about.
One in the back.
One superfluous nipple. I love that. Super Dave Osborne, the movie When Jews Were Funny, and you can find it. Should we go to the website whenjewsworefunny.com?
Is there a website like that?
Yes, whenjewsworefunny.com.
That's hysterical.
Put together by non-Jews.
I know, that's what's great.
Thanks, Dave.
Okay, great to talk to you.
Always good to talk to you. Super interesting guy. That's a crazy, crazy life, crazy background, right?
I just put this together. Remember in Defending Your Life, Albert Brooks' movie, he wrote and directed it. There's a great joke where he's in the afterlife, obviously. He's in purgatory, and they see a stand-up comedian in purgatory. And the guy's doing crowd work. He's not very good, but he's doing crowd work.
Yeah, yeah.
And he's like, hey, where are you from? Where'd you die? Blah, blah, blah. And he says to the one guy, his Albert Brooks, he's like, how about you? How did you die, sir? And Albert Brooks says, on stage, like you.
Right. That's a great
I wonder
line.
If that's a little bit, I wonder if that's even consciously aware of, you know,
It's such a funny line that it doesn't need that motivation. But yeah, you wonder if he thought about it, and then you wonder if he didn't think about it. But it's just there.
Yeah, great line.
Crazy. Yeah, great. Defending Your Life. One of the not only funny movie, important movie. All right. Jesse May Peluso's out there. Jesse May Peluso, Girl Code, MTV.
Yes.
And that is Sundays, 8 p.m. Good to see you.
Nice to see you. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So
officially.
Now, by the way, Jesse May is going to be doing some stand-up June 5th through the 8th, Irvine Improv, Levity Live, by the way, West Nyack, New York, and that's April 17th through the 19th. You go to jessamay.com if you want some information.
You got all my stuff.
I heard you had a Bloody Mary at 6 a.m. I heard. Were you traveling?
Who doesn't? I don't trust people who don't have Bloody Marys as early as possible. I don't. You're not a human.
I have flown. I flew first class L.A. to New York.
Bragger.
Yeah.
Humble brag.
Fucking person next to me was offered, you know, a beverage before we took off.
Right.
Declined it. Was offered, like, you know, a snack, a salad, nothing. Entree, no. Cocktails, no. Dessert, no. Sack of nuts, a hot town. The guy literally just sat there.
The least he can do
miserable.
Is offer it to you.
Yeah, totally. Share.
Or just kick it back to the, you know, little people and
little
coach.
People.
Like, where the guy sat there for 6 hours and just turned back every offering. Fucking insane, right?
That's
insane.
I mean, the
it's not like
cheese,
he's on a date.
Little cheese plate. Yeah, right. The whole thing.
Like, I would love some cheese. I just want cheese and wine. The minute I get on a plane, I tell the stewardess, I'm like, look, I know the cheese goes quick. Save me the cheese plate.
Yeah.
Because all these bastards want the cheese plate, and I'm pissed and I'm stuck with, like, the beef jerky.
Will they do it for you?
They do.
Yeah. You know? Now, and you don't, if you sit, they'll do this where they're out of whatever by the time they get to the back. Always a slap in the face.
Yeah.
So were you traveling? What were you doing?
Yeah, I've been traveling for, I haven't slept in 24 hours.
All right.
I was traveling. I don't even know, like, I couldn't tell you what time I got in. I don't even know what day it is. Mm-hmm. I was in New Hampshire.
Mm-hmm.
And I just stayed up all night and drove to Boston and flew out.
Yeah.
With Bloody Marys. I landed, got a Bloody Mary at the hotel.
Yeah.
Went to brunch before here.
Mm-hmm.
Got another Bloody Mary.
It's a way to go.
So.
Takes the edge off.
I'm ready.
You know what fucking pisses me off? It pisses me off. I've said it once, said it again, that once you get once you're in the airport, once you get to the other side of security, shouldn't you be in international waters?
Maritime law.
Yeah, if you travel through Texas and you go in there and it's Sunday and it's 10:30 in the morning and you pull up to the bar and you go, I got 11:30 flight. Give me a Bloody Mary. They go, we don't serve before noon.
That's insane.
And you go, do you see that airplane? Yes. If I go onto that airplane, I can get a Bloody Mary. It is parked on the same ground that your fucking fat ass is parked on here in this bar. That plane, I can get a Bloody Mary on, and it's parked right here. Right in Texas, right? It's 30 feet away. What's that? Yeah, well, we have laws that say our bars. Right, but if the aluminum tube next to the bar is serving Bloody Marys all day, every day, then once we get past, shouldn't it just be international waters? Shouldn't we just open and sell?
Totally. Party pooper laws.
Those are the worst laws. Totally.
Do you bring nips? Do you travel with little nips?
When it gets cold? Oh, sorry. Oh, is that
not
a racial?
Not
two
actually,
of them.
Lakshmana came with... What? No, the little... Oh, travelers.
Yeah.
I figured that one out.
That's real lush.
I figured out the...
Well, travelers.
I figured out the traveler thing once. Yeah. Now, I finally figured out that you must bring your own booze in situations where you can't find booze, it said, or they're not serving, or they're closed, or whatever it is.
You have to put them in a little Ziploc bag, and...
I just put it right next to my shampoo. I'm like, this is, you know, it's my necessary, my feminine product.
There's a certain walk of shame where you order the cran apple, whatever. By the way, there's no such thing as cranberry juice anymore. There's a little kiosk that's in the terminal. And you go, give me the cran apple, blueberry, boysenberry medley. And then you go to the bathroom and you dump out half of it. And then you mix in your little smearing off thing. And you try not to have anyone see it. But you do it on that koala changing table.
Koala changing table.
Next to the baby.
I'll go ahead and lay out, you know,
the
whole mixing, whole rack, you know, just out on the koala. Mm-hmm. That'd be a fun thing to do.
Maraschino cherries on.
Yeah, that's right.
Maraschino cherries.
Yeah.
What happened to that kid?
Yeah, I got some of those mini onions, whatever those things are.
For a Gibson.
For a Gibson. Martini. That's right.
Lay it out. Gibsons? Oh, delicious.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. Yeah, you're flying. You want to catch a buzz.
Yeah, catch a little buzz. I took a Xanax for the first time. That was delightful.
Nice.
I was like, this not work.
Yeah.
Done.
Being altered is awesome.
That's a good way to put it.
Hey, listen, it's what people crave. Look. I have this theory that people really want to get away from whatever's going on at the time. They want to get out of their mind for a second.
Want to escape.
Yeah.
Want to escape. So roller coasters were invented for this. Racing cars. It's when you're doing it, it's all your thing. You're not, it's the one time you're not thinking about it. People love sex. I think it's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. For this reason, not the same
sex
person over
coasters.
And over again, obviously. Yeah, sex on a roller coaster. Anything bungee jumping.
Like, anything visceral, playing drums.
Right,
yeah.
Just anything where you're not thinking about, and then there's, if you're not, don't feel like learning how to play the drums.
There's
you got
you
the
in
Xanax.
A, in a toilet on a koala changing table.
That's what I'm saying. So how did stand-up start for you?
I was living in Syracuse and moved to Boston, and someone's like, you're funny, so I just tried it out, did some writing and improv. I started doing improv in Boston,
mm-hmm.
which I just can't stand improv.
Mm.
It's just...
You're doing it now.
No.
You're not doing real improv.
Yeah, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, like, everybody live. There's a huge manhole cover. All 15 people gather
Name
around.
Name a city.
And we need a relationship.
You're a mailman.
And us, well,
give us an
emotion.
We need
a relationship. We need a relationship for these two.
How do mailmen feel? Scared of dogs.
It's always funny when you do the super boring physical stuff at the beginning and they do the, all right, now it's a 15-foot-wide manhole cover. Let's all get around it. There's like 12 people. Remember, it's very heavy. It's very heavy. You're lifting from bend at the knee. There's always one asshole who's over his head while everyone else is still
ruining
down
it.
Around their knees. And it's always like, Steven, huh? What? I'm fucking Superman. And it's like the person to the right and your left are down around their knees still trying to lift.
Steven.
And you're fucking over your head with the fucking – get it down.
Ruining the illusion, Steven.
That's right. You didn't break off a piece of the manhole cover and go over your head with it. You're all lifting a giant manhole cover. Yeah.
That's why improv sucks.
It does. Yeah. So you get into stand-up instead.
Yes. I did stand-up after that, and then I moved to New York and drank for a while and then got into stand-up
mm-hmm.
more heavily than drinking.
Would you like to hang out and crack wise and jump in on the news with us?
Sure. Let's do it.
Let's do it.
I'm in your house.
Yeah. That's what I like. All right. Let me give a little love to LifeLock, baby. Oh, identity thieves. They're shrewd, man. They're targeting your checking, your savings account. Coming after your cash, your retirement? Allison, what do you know?
A data breach at a Catholic organization in Seattle that led to rampant tax fraud in Washington appears to have spread to Oregon. The organization said hackers stole Social Security numbers from church employees and volunteers in order to file false tax returns and claim the refunds. Here's a little fun fact. The number of IRS tax fraud cases the FBI investigates has risen 600% in the last 2 years.
Wow. Well, let's not get hacked into, people. LifeLock guards your identity, credit, monitors your bank accounts for takeover fraud. You need it. It's 2014. Look, it's great. You can do all your business over the computer and swipe your credit card wherever you want, do all that kind of stuff, but you got to pay the fiddler. LifeLock, it's just part of doing business, and it was awarded best detection among ID protection programs. Dawson.
LifeLock services can't protect you or your bank accounts if you're not a member. Visit LifeLock.com and enter promo code ADAM for a special 10% discount. That's promo code ADAM at LifeLock.com to get our special 10% discount. LifeLock.com. Network does not cover all transactions.
All right, so let's do a little news with Allison Rosen.
The news with Allison Rosen.
She'll read some news from her iPad. Sometimes it's good, sometimes it's bad. It's Allison. Allison. And when it's time to wrap it up, she'll sign it off with zip it cut. It's Allison. Allison.
We're just going to gloss over the fact that when we all entered, you were having your hair cut at the studio.
Yeah, well, as I said, starting to shoot this independent film, and everyone agreed I needed a haircut, and we tried to figure out how to do it. Part of it is to match something that we already shot, so you have to match what we already got on film, so my hair needed to look the same. So since we're starting at 6 a.m. tomorrow morning and decided it would take too long to do it there, we'd have the person meet me here, and that's where I got the haircut. Yes.
What will the model cuts people think? You're cheating.
I had the
He has a faithful relationship with a $10 haircut place.
What are you doing?
Had the semi-condescending conversation with Lynette this afternoon where she said, my hairdresser says your kind of hair is very difficult to cut. And I said, well, not so difficult that the Mexican chicks can't do it for $10 in 12 minutes.
So maybe, the bar is set.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So three are dead after shooting Sunday at two Jewish facilities near Kansas City. The shootings were at the Jewish Community Center of Greater Kansas City in Overland Park, Kansas, and at the Village Shalom Retirement Community in Leewood, Kansas. But they are right next to each other. It must be right on the border. I'm confused by the geographical aspect of this. But anyway, the victims included a teenager, another guy, and an elderly woman. There is a suspect in custody. He's in his 70s. They don't know if it's a hate crime. They think it might be. It is the night before Passover starts.
Oh. I feel anytime you shoot somebody you don't know, let's call it a hate crime.
Yeah, what else could it be?
That's what I feel.
You don't like the person.
Yeah.
You love shooting people so much, it's a love crime.
You could love shooting so much. You're just out there.
But that's unlikely.
I don't feel like as much as we try to shove things into the hate crime category, there's not that much of it going on. I've seen, or at least as much as it's sort of like, I don't know, shark attacks. We love talking about it. We're into it. It scares us. We don't want to go in the water. Everyone goes, oh, don't kid yourself, blah, blah, blah. But the actual body count with the hate crime is not as much as the talk count of the hate crime.
I think it's just so upsetting. We want to think it doesn't happen at all.
And also, it's like, I don't know if this is in your news, but there was a L.A. sheriff who just shot some white guy who was in an apartment from Tosh 2.0.
Right.
And he was in there and somebody was getting stabbed and he came running out of the apartment after the person he was trying to help and he came running out. And this 30-year-old white guy and he got gunned down by the sheriff department. Now, if it was a black guy, you'd go, oh.
Hate crime.
It's a hate crime.
Yeah.
I mean, Jesse Jackson would be taking the dirigible over here and climbing down the rope ladder and there'd be a riot in downtown L.A. and that's what it'd be. What other reason other than the guy's skin color would you shoot this guy who was coming out of this whatever? And that would be that. But when it's a 30-year-old white dude, then it's just, sheriff's department, there. They always shoot people.
Just a misfire. Stupidity crime.
Yeah.
They mistook him for the suspect. But still, and they also apparently shot the victim.
But that's what they would have said if he was if he was black. They would have said that, and then they went, "Oh, come on, you shot him because he's black."
Better safe than sorry, Allison.
Just shoot everybody in the room.
But
I didn't know.
Here's what I say all the time: there are racists out there, but there are many more assholes and people that just do a shitty job that they outnumber the racists 5,000 to 1. But when the black guy gets shot, you assume it's racism. White guy gets shot, you go, oh, that guy's a horrible sheriff. These guys need to be retrained. They're horrible at their job. It's mainly being horrible at their job. That's what most of
just
it is.
Bad aim.
But, I mean, honestly, and we wouldn't know, but a black guy runs out of apartment after trying to save someone from being stabbed. Probably or presumably white sheriff department opens fire on the guy. He's dead at age 30. There's Jesse and Al are coming to town, and they need answers. That's the way it goes.
Yeah. It doesn't go both ways for the whites.
Yeah. That's right. Why isn't Donald Trump coming to town and arranging a rally?
He can certainly afford it.
That's right. We'll do it over at Lakeside Golf Course.
So the story that you're talking about, Adam, an aspiring TV producer whose name was John Winkler, he was from Philadelphia. And he was hanging out with some friends who lived in the apartment below him on Palm Avenue when a man who also lived in that apartment climbed over the balcony with a knife. The guy who climbed over the balcony with the knife was in an incoherent state of mind, very paranoid, which was uncharacteristic, said a witness. Alexander McDonald, the guy with the knife, took his roommate, Winkler, and another man hostage, then flew into a rage and began stabbing and fighting with them. Someone called 911, and deputies were told the hostage taker was a thin man in a black shirt. Deputies announced themselves, pounded on the door, and at the moment, one of the stabbing victims took the opportunity to escape. There's a quote, "The door suddenly opened, and a man with blood spurting from his neck entered the doorway, with Winkler, a thin man wearing a black shirt, running after him only inches away." So naturally, they had to shoot.
I was going to say, that's just how I am if there's not, you know, any cheese plate left on the plane.
Yeah.
I just get kind of crazy and stab people.
Yeah, I'm the same way when
the
bar's
closed. A
lot of
blood in the neck, yeah.
All right, sad, but like I said, how many times do I have to tell you? Cops are assholes and they're fuck-ups. Racist is third. It's asshole first, fuck-up second, right. Racist.
I mean, it's definitely
third.
There, but it's, let's put it in a proper place.
Yeah, it's there, but definitely more assholes and fuck-ups.
Yeah,
I
that's why they're
that.
opening up on the Asian women who are delivering the newspapers at 5 in the morning and so on, and punching the white woman who's pregnant in the parking lot and shooting the 30-year-old white guys. And
I mean, what is their track record? For actually getting the right person versus shooting the wrong one.
It's not good, and as bad as this is for this guy and his family, I think there's something insane like Los Angeles paid out $100 million. And, I mean, guess whose family is going to get $25 million for this? You don't have a dead son and somebody goes, well, look, here's a free tracksuit and a gift certificate to Knott's Berry Farm. This is millions of dollars, and it's always like, they're not paying it, we're paying it. I think it was something insane. It was like, we paid out $100 million in the last 5 years or something. Chicago paid out $500
million.
I mean, just, you can only shoot so many of the wrong people before you go broke. I like the idea, too, that whoever did the shooting is going to be put on leave with full pay.
Right, and then they'll be brought
and then
back.
We pay for everything.
Yeah, here's how we punish you. Go to the beach, and you'll get your check.
Be sure to cash those checks on time, though.
That's right. That's right. Anyway, where were we?
So we didn't have a chance to talk about the fact that comedian John Panette died.
Yeah.
He was 50.
Yeah, I had this conversation with Mike August, my usual conversation with Mike August. He's like, John Panette's died. Yeah. How old? And then Mike was like, God, he was only 50. I said, yeah, but he was 500 pounds since he was 19. And he's like, yeah, but 50, so young. I said, not so young when you're 500 pounds from 19.
Not so young when you live every year like it's 10 years.
Yeah, and
he lived to the fullest.
He said, no, fullest is right.
Literally.
Yeah, he said, yeah, but I think he lost. I think he got down to like 250 his last few years.
Ago.
I said, right, but it's like saying you have 23 pack a day years under your belt, literally under his belt. And he's like, yeah, so young.
I was saying
like,
that so
not
young.
That young for being 5'10", 500 pounds your entire life. 50 looks pretty good. And as we've talked about a million times, if John was skinny and smoking, he probably would have seen his 68th birthday versus not seeing his 51st. Now, what was he, and how much weight did he lose?
He once weighed 450 pounds, and he slimmed to 250 pounds in the past 2 years. His dramatic weight loss was the subject of a new comedy set he was developing that he titled They Call Me Slim.
But he, I believe, was not 6'3". I believe he went about 5'10". We'll figure out his dimensions. Yes, he was 5'10".
They said he died of natural causes stemming from a medical history he was being treated for, and he had addiction problems in the past, but at the time of his death, he was clean and sober.
Wow.
But being 5'10 and 450 pounds for what is 20 years, I mean, what is essentially half of your...
Oh, yeah,
Or the entirety of your adult life.
That residual effect just sneaks up on you.
Yeah, you're not supposed to see 60 at that kind of weight for that... kind of those years. But either way, very funny comedian who shall be missed. All right, let's do one more. What do we got? Who didn't die?
A man in Ohio who was accused of harassing a neighbor and her disabled children for the last 15 years had to sit on a street corner Sunday morning with a sign declaring he's a bully. This was a requirement of his sentence. 62-year-old Edmund Aviv had to display a sign for 5 hours, and it says, "I am a bully. I pick on children that are disabled, and I am intolerant of those that are different from myself. My actions do not reflect an appreciation for the diverse South Euclid community that I live in." It's a little wordy, really.
That's
it
very
is.
Wordy.
It's a lot for a
That's
sign.
Hard.
Mm-hmm.
Should be children who are disabled.
They should do an acronym and have people figure it out.
Yes.
I just, out of just reflex and instinct would probably walk by and give the guy a buck and just keep walking. Hey.
Go bully.
Was he a veteran?
He arrived.
Hope you get back on your feet.
You're trained.
Go get yourself some
anyone with cardboard and crayons, they get a buck as I go by.
I wonder what it says on the back of it. Need a miracle.
Just kidding.
I'll bet that dude made a few bucks that day. Just for out of habit. People with habit.
Probably good. Yeah.
He arrived at the corner before 9 a.m. And sat in a chair with the sign in front of him. Within a couple of minutes, a passing motorist honked at him. Mm-hmm. I doubt that's a shame honk.
Like,
I don't know what that is.
I got the colossal biggest pussy in town honk when I drove through my Red Arrow on the way here and got the the puss honk, light green, arrow red.
But what are you doing? What are you doing?
Wait a minute.
Fucking Sunday night. No one gives a shit. No one's on the road. Shut up, pussy. Jesus
That's a guy
Christ.
Who didn't want any drinks on your flight.
Yeah.
No fun.
I got the tiniest nudge of a honk ever. I was waiting to turn left onto like a pretty busy, one of those streets where you wish there was just a light. Mm-hmm. And then there was a car behind me. And I don't know if he, it was like he was saying, hey, can you go maybe? It was like, it was the weirdest thing. It was fine. I knew what he was saying, which I think was, look alive, but hey, no pressure to look alive.
I appreciate a finesse honk guy.
Yeah.
Like, come on, you can do it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
He feathered the horn.
I don't know how he did it. It's like he blew on it. Mm-hmm. So Aviv, the guy with the sign, had feuded with his neighbor, Sandra Prue, for the past 15 years. The most recent case stemmed from Aviv being annoyed at the smell coming from her dryer vent when she did laundry. I mean, that's one of my favorite smells. So
I
he's
love
insane.
That.
In retaliation, he hooked up.
Smells like a gregarious little bear is coming out of there, right?
It smells like your mom. Like, it smells great. Like,
it's
not
the only thing that's
mom.
Good.
Not our moms.
Yeah.
Not your moms, but
no, I mean, in a if you live in a shitty house, that warm, sort of linty, clean air is the only good
that.
Part of it.
Yeah, it's the best.
I like to just hang out outside laundromats, truly, sniffing the air. So he hooked up kerosene to a fan and to blow that onto her property. She has two adult adopted children with developmental disabilities, cerebral palsy and epilepsy, a husband with dementia and a paralyzed son. She said in a letter to the court that he called her an ethnic slur while she was holding her adopted black children, spit on her several times, regularly threw dog feces on her son's car windshield, and once smeared feces on a wheelchair ramp.
Mm.
The judge also ordered him to serve 15 days in jail and to undergo anger management classes, and he had to submit an apology to her.
Can I just say this? I've had the douchey neighbors too, and the ones that get up in your fucking grill, and the ones where you can't get away with anything, like where you go, well, let's just trim that branch that's hanging over into my yard, and then you say to your guys, do it on Wednesday at like 11 a.m. when this guy's at work because he's such a fucking – he's in everyone's grill. And sure enough, you're trimming the branch. It's hanging into your yard and the guy's coming around and knocking on your door. The very first thing with all these fucking douchebags is – why don't you have a fucking job?
Yeah,
God knows what's going on at my house because I'm fucking gone all day. You could be raping the shit out of my dog, making sweet love to my wife, and fucking raiding my booze cabinet all fucking day long because I'm not there.
Oh, with your dog it's rape, but with your wife it's sweet love.
Sweet love. That's right.
Well, the dog can't technically,
those two things are interchangeable.
What I'm saying is I am gone all fucking day, every day. If you want to trim a branch that's on my property, on my tree that's hanging onto your property, and you plan to do it at 11 in the morning on Wednesday, guess who's not going to be there to knock on your door with the snarky, excuse you, I'm gone, I'm working. The first thing that all these fucking assholes are is home all fucking day. It's like, I'm just sitting here. Thursday on my sofa reading a book and I have to smell this person's right. What the fuck are you doing at home? Get the fuck to work, you lazy sack of shit. That's the first thing about all these fucking people is they never leave the fucking house ever. And that's what the fucking judge should be. Like, why are you just fucking
right, making her life hell?
I can't be annoyed by my annoying neighbors. I'm not home. They're fucking home all the fucking time. You'd be annoyed, too, if you're just home monitoring everything all the fucking time. It's the first thing these fucking douchebags do. Just fucking kill yourselves, you assholes. Kill yourselves, you cunts. I hate them. I fucking hate them. They're just home all the fucking time. They're angry. They're pissed off. And then they want to know what's going on with your shit. And it's like, why are you home? And why? What does this guy do? Fuck him. Fuck everyone. Let's bring it home.
That's the news. I'm Allison Rosen. It's a bit cunt.
That was the news with Allison Rosen.
Oh, God.
That had to feel good.
Fucking neighbor. I do it every show, so it doesn't matter. But fucking douchebag neighbor.
No, that's a finely
that.
Honed like, bit.
Oh, yeah, that's pretty
literally
good.
Literally just, oh, just fucking home all fucking day.
And that was Jessamay Peluso and the late, great Bob Einstein, a.k.a. Super Dave Osborne, back in 2014. All right, we'll keep the clips going. This next one, we played some musical performances yesterday, and today we're going to keep that going because this guy used to come in. His name's Kelly James, and he would bring in the acoustic guitar, sing some catchy hooks, and then freestyle about whatever Adam wanted to hear in real time, and he would take suggestions. It was a lot of fun having him on.
It was often insane. Sometimes the results were unexplainable, and it was just kind of like, it was almost like a great improv scene or something. Always very entertaining when he came in, but sometimes it was unbelievable. This is Adam Carolla Show 1183, Rob Riggle, Kelly James, Allison Rose, and Brian Bishop. We got some Rob, we got some Kelly. Check it out.
So, Rob, what are you working on? What's coming up? What's coming out for you?
Well, I got a couple films that have been shot already that will probably come out in the spring. And but right now, I'm actually down. I'm down in Atlanta shooting a movie, Dumb and Dumber 2, with Jim Carrey and Jeff Daniels.
They got Jim and Jeff back together, so they did Dumb and Dumber like a prequel or something like that, right?
Yeah, obviously. I think they did that. That was like called Dumb and Dumberer or something. I don't remember.
There was one of those.
That was a prequel. Yeah. So
when Harry Met Lloyd.
That's right. And it didn't have Jim or Jeff. But this one, they're going back. The Farley brothers are directing. And they got the whole team back together. So it's a lot of fun.
Yeah. I guess somebody finally said to Carrie, you're done with your art. You ready to make people laugh and get a paycheck? Let's go. Forget about Andy Kaufman. Come on down. Let's get some people laughing and get some fannies and some seats. What's your?
You well, I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Oh, my part. I'm playing twins in this movie. So I actually have two roles.
Oh.
You're like, yeah.
Yeah, you're like those Vanderkloppen brothers from that network movie. I don't have a great memory,
Social Network? The Von Winkles and whatever?
You know what I'm saying. That's you.
I'm with you. I'm tracking with you. And I wish those guys are, that was Armie Hammer playing both those guys.
Yeah.
6'5" and sexy. That's not me, though.
Well.
I'm a little shorter, a little dumpier.
I don't know, Rob. You're the last time I saw you, you were in fighting marine shape, and you're well over 6'2". So I don't know if that's 6'5", but it's over 6'2", and that's good enough for me. So how do you get from the island, how do you get from being a Marine to doing comedy?
Well, I was a theater and film major in college, and I was a comedy fan my whole life, just anything comedy. I mean, I could quote you the entire Caddyshack and Stripes and Meatballs movies and, you know, anything comedy-based, Saturday Night Live, all that stuff, so... Always a fan, and had a passion for it. But I also had my pilot's license when I was an undergrad in college, and I got a guaranteed flight contract with the Marine Corps. So when it came time to graduate, I was either going to be a waiter or right. I was going to be Top Gun.
Right.
And Top Gun guys tend to score better with the ladies. That's what it came down to.
And how did you get your pilot's license so early?
I was fortunate that I had my grandfather. He was in the Army Air Corps in World War II, and he wanted me to learn how to fly. So he paid for my lessons. I'm sure I couldn't have done it on my own, obviously, but he was kind enough and generous enough to pay for me to get my pilot's license, and so I did. It was great. It was a great date, by the way. When you're in college.
Oh my God!
Call up a girl and say, "Hey, would you like to? You want to go for a flight around campus? Maybe check out some. We'll fly over the lake and." And then you know, and when you don't have any game, that's
Yeah.
You need tools like that sometimes. Well, first
off, there's a couple things. I saw The Aviator, so I know just how sexy this can be. You two up there just drinking milk from the same jug.
Right.
But, you know, there's also part two where you just put the plane into a steep dive, and you just say the only thing that's going to pull us out of this dive is if you start sucking. And, you know, I don't know a woman on the planet that wouldn't want to get out of that dive. You know what I'm saying? Now, listen, call it what you will, but there's different rules in the air. You know what I mean? It's kind of international waters up there. You know?
Well, I'll tell you what, I didn't put the plane into a dive.
Well,
because I just didn't trust myself as a pilot to get us out of it.
You start pitching it a little, and you say, baby, grab the yoke in the center. Let's see if we can't get this steady again.
You know what I would do, though? On occasion, I might be known to as we're coming in for landing, make a few more radio calls than necessary. Make a little make work in the cockpit. Mm-hmm. Like I was doing a whole lot of fancy shit fancy stuff.
Yeah, that's all right.
I was doing, but I really wasn't doing anything except just trying to showboat a little bit.
Right.
You know, you got to play what you got to play. You got to play it up a little bit.
Yeah, you do that thing that after you set down, you say the Eagles landed, and then you put when you say nine, you say niner three times. And she's impressed, duly. So
exactly. Or you get a concerned look on your face. You're like, oh, hold on a second. This is bad. Hold on. And then you're solving a problem that doesn't exist. It makes you look like you're Apollo 13.
Sweet. Now, how many? Yeah. What is the biggest or most advanced aircraft you ended up flying?
It really wasn't much. It was still a trainer. It was still it was a T-34 trainer. Which is a single engine prop driven aircraft, but it's kind of like, I mean, it's fully aerobatic. It's almost like old World War II aircraft.
Yeah. It's what they would use if you went to one of those aerobatic schools but one of those things where your wife went to an auction and bought you a day at Top Gun school and you got to duke it out with some friend. Is it one of those planes?
Yeah, it's like that. Only it's not a side by side; it's a tandem. So it's you sit one in front of the other. So the cockpit's very tight, and it's a little more. It has a lot more power, I think, than those planes. I've seen those planes where you sit side by side and you go up and dogfight each other.
So, right.
No, this one's you sit tandem, and it's a little more aggressive airplane.
Right. But you guys are stacked. You know, one behind the other.
Yeah.
So it's a thinner,
exactly.
More aerodynamic.
Instructor, right, and you sit in front of the instructor, and the instructor can generally yell things at you and throw clipboards at your helmet when you screw up and do stuff like that.
But
so that's a lot of fun.
You know, that's no F-18, but it's as far as the propeller-driven stuff goes, it's about as acrobatic and responsive and fun and fast as you get in the propeller era, right?
Absolutely, no doubt about it. And then, of course, you know, I went up. I've been up in many an aircraft too. I mean, I've flown in EA-6B Prowlers, which are those big jets. They look like the old A-6.
Love the
Flight of the Intruder. You know,
sure.
Yeah. So that and those that was a blast. You know, we went up. I went up on a BAM flight, which is a basic air maneuver flight, and I have to do them every quarter. So you know, basically it's just a rock and roll flight. You go up and you just rock that plane, doing aerobatics. Basic air maneuver. You're doing Immelmann, split S's, barrel rolls, loops. You're doing 4G turns, and then you slam it the other way without unloading it. So you're turning 4Gs this way, and then you slam it over, and you do 4Gs the other way. And
you're trying to shear a wing off, right?
Yeah, exactly. You're pushing it as hard as you can without breaking the aircraft, and then you know I was in the back. And the pilots, I knew they were trying to get me to puke, but I hung tough. I was very proud of myself for not puking.
I talked to, and I don't know if you've ever talked to Tom Cruise about his P-51 Mustang, but
that's awesome.
But here's a weird thing, Rob, and you as a pilot, and me as a civilian, but a guy who thinks like a pilot. I talked to Tom Cruise, and he said, yeah, I got a P-51 Mustang. And I said, wow, that's a lot of plane, you know? And he said, and he said, I fly it time to time, you know? And I thought, you fly a P-51 Mustang? And then I thought, Well, you must have a somebody in there with you who's right. Pretty experienced, because that plane's a handful. It's a tail dragger, and it's a V12, and it's supercharged, and it's a beast. And then I realized when I saw some sort of 2020 piece on him that he had one of the only P-51 Mustang trainers I'd ever seen in my life. I'd never seen a P-51 trainer. I've only seen the single blister cockpit, just one pilot cockpit P-51 Mustang. I'd never seen the stacked one. Have you ever seen one of those?
Right. I've never seen a stacked one, but obviously you have to have I know they have to exist.
Or you couldn't train people to fly that. Right.
Yeah, because that thing's a beast, like you said. I mean, just taxiing that thing is a gargantuan proposition.
I always thought it'd be the greatest, in terms of, news stories, Rob, you think about celebrities getting DUIs, and once in a while, Mel Gibson freaks out and starts screaming at his old lady about getting a blowjob in a hot tub. And that makes pretty good news. But Tom Cruise loading up the P-51 Mustang with ordnance and going up and down Hollywood Boulevard and strafing people would be the greatest celebrity meltdown of all time, would it not?
It would. Well, that would be the new standard. That would be the new what people would have to try to aspire to as far as ultimate meltdowns.
Move over, Fatty Arbuckle.
Just raking Hollywood Boulevard on a P-51 until it finally run out of gas, and then he takes it into a building.
It's perfect. First off, he's got a lot of money. He's got a lot of juice. He's got a lot of guys working for him, First thing he says is, I want to make this thing fully functional. And he tells the guy it's for a movie that's coming up. Right. World War II movie's doing, but he's going to have to make it fully functional. So he gets a guy out there who, knows his way around a blacksmith table, and he gets that thing back up and running with the 50 caliber, whatever, machine gun, maybe the cannon in the front. I don't know what that thing ultimately had, a cannon and probably a couple of, two in each wing, and he gets the thing fully loaded up.
It had six 50 cals, three in each wing, I think.
Beautiful. Now,
that's a lot of destruction. A lot of damage that thing can do.
We add the drop tank as well. We get he can
stay up there. He can stay in orbit over Hollywood Boulevard for hours.
With that drop tank. Right. Yeah. Or just extra fuel when he flies into the Cinerama Dome while his movie is playing to end the whole thing. Okay, but hold on. So now he's up there just strafing up and down the Walk of Fame, just up and down the Walk of Fame. He detours the Sunset. Maybe he just goes over to Malibu to give it to Cher. Or whatever highfalutin celebrities over there, But he basically sticks to that area. Now, what's LAPD going to do? They get some birds in the air. Where they got cops hanging out of the side of the helicopter with AR, M16s. Like, what are they doing? What's their helicopter going to do?
Maybe they could get into a hover and try to shoot at the engine with some high power. But even that, you're not going to stop Tom Cruise in a P-51 fully loaded when he's got helmet for leather. You could even put a couple 500 pounders on the bottom of that thing so he could really get busy.
Yeah. Ooh, he hits the Scientology Celebrity Center. That's the first bomb that gets dropped. Oh, this is getting so good. All right. Now, you got a couple birds in the air, LAPD birds in the air. They don't have any guns on them. They have guys hanging out with pistols and rifles. You're not doing anything. Tom Cruise going by 500 miles an hour.
Yeah.
All right. So what do we do?
I don't know. But they'd have to scramble jets out of San Diego, I would think.
Miramar.
Get up here. But by the time that's done, I mean, he's already handled most of his business.
Yeah. And by the way, it's not like anyone would know when Tom Cruise said, I'm going to go fire up the P-51. Not like anyone said, let's scramble those birds out of San Diego. He'd get in a good hour of strafing before he encountered anything. And then when he did encounter something, what would he do? Because they'd just take him out right over Hollywood Boulevard? That's more innocent death and destruction.
I think so. And Tom was, Tom gets into character when he gets into it. So I don't think he'd take him down that easy. I think
no.
He'd put up a good fight.
No, no. Obviously, during the filming of Top Gun, he did get some seat time and something, at least a simulator. I mean, the man, I'm just saying, when the dust settled on this day, would there be a bigger celebrity meltdown ever, and could you ever top it?
No, there will never be a bigger meltdown than that, and I don't see how you could, just even in the physical realm, how you could top it.
Thank you, Rob.
I think
Riggle.
That's the ultimate. I think you've just described the Everest of meltdowns.
Thank you. Thus, you get a plug. Website, facebook.com/Bud Light, Twitter at Rob Riggle, campaign, Bud Light Superstition Survey. I'm interested in this. Rob, did I get it for you? Are you good?
I'm good. I think you nailed it. And I'm going to think about this scenario you painted pretty much for the rest of the month.
I appreciate that. And if you could, ooh, let's see. You know what? Since his plane is a tandem, right? Why don't we have some other celebrity in the back of it? Not an instructor, obviously, but another angry, demented celebrity. Let's put Mel Gibson in there. I don't know. We can think about
Kanye. What about Kanye?
I feel like Kanye loves himself too much for this. He doesn't want to go out this way. I'm thinking more of Dennis Hopper's passed away, right? But Dennis Hopper, at a certain point, had that, you know, there's that death sentence where the doctor says, look, it's inoperable. You have 6 months to live. I'm sorry. Go make peace with your God. That's the guy we need in the back of the airplane with the naked, with the old time aviators, leather helmet on, just screaming. We'll work on this. Maybe Nicole Kidman. Maybe they reunite. I don't know. There's a lot of possibilities here, Rob.
Whoever's in the back, though, I want the experience to be enhanced. I want them to be on hard drugs like PCP, mm-hmm. like that kind of stuff, where they're impervious to any kind of pain or feeling.
Yeah,
they're really out there.
And at a certain point, when Cruise gets shot up, this person just crawls over them and starts flying the plane erratically, but still keeping it in the air.
Yeah.
All right, we're going to hammer this out next time you're in LA, Rob. You come in studio, and we're really going to hammer out the details.
I love it, I want the guy, whoever it is, I want him so hopped up. Did you ever see Sharky's Machine?
Yeah, Burt Reynolds.
And the scary albino.
Yeah,
shot him like 100 times, but it had no effect on him.
That's
he was
right
on that PCP.
Yeah,
that's what I want whoever's in the back seat to be on. So you can't take him down. You just can't.
The super timely Sharky's Machine reference. Thanks, Rob. We'll talk soon.
Hey, thanks for having me, Adam. Take care, buddy.
All right. The great Rob Riggle. Love me some Rob Riggle. Our good and dear friend, Kelly James. He's bringing his guitar, and he's in next. What's this one called?
This song's called Marinade. It goes like this.
Hold on. What's it go like?
I just wanted to say that.
Just as long as you don't yell Freebird, we're good.
Alone in the dark, afraid of the light. Can we just stay for half the night? Yeah, I really need it just to live inside these walls. And I'm one of those caught in between what I had said and what I could mean. Yeah, what is right and what I really think I want. Your kisses like stars aren't for me, aren't for now. They're for anyone who wants to take a look. And I'd give anything just to be, just to see under the sky when midnight comes unhooked, yeah. I need you here and I want you bad. I love the taste of your marinade. I need you here and I want you bad. I love the taste of your marinade. So let me marinate. Only once, never again. That's what we said, I won't regret. You treat me like you've always had me here.
only once, never again. That's what we said, but I won't regret. You treat me like you always had me here, yeah. In shadows, hide the real me, the real you. The poison keeps us numb from the truth. I know that you sleep with a clear mind, with my arm across your chest. But when I'm with you, I'm not with you. This malaise will never rest, no. I need you here and I want you there. I love the taste of your marinade. And I want you bad. I love the taste of your marinade. So let me marinate. You rise from the depths with a bottle and a dress, with enough to make me guess a little preview. I'm staring at the moon while you doing what you do. And you say you like it too, but I can see through. With Romeo and Juliet mixed with booze and sugar sweat. She says I'm not finished yet, from the gutter to a private jet. Keys on a motel TV set, watching reruns to forget. Choose the wrong fish in the net, that's just what you're gonna get. I need you here and I want you bad. I love the taste of your marinade. I need you here and I want you bad. I love the taste of your marinade. So let me marinate.
Wow. I'm going to pay you an amazing compliment. I'm hungry and horny right now. And it's usually one or the other. And that's about the most you can say about a song. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I'm ready to go.
I feel like what food is not safe around you right now?
Donuts beware.
Nice job, Kelly. Thanks. Always sounds great on the show. We'll do a little Kelly's Freestyle and coming up. Anyway, the pattern transcending the name of the album.
One of the rare pop songs that use a malaise. I've never heard that that often.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Try to keep it interesting.
And that was the very talented Rob Riggle and Kelly James, respectively, back in 2013. All right, now, we're going to keep it in 2013, but we're going to a live show. And this is, once again, back when we used to have live podcasts at Adam's restaurant that he owned, next to the Acme Theater, which he talks about all the time. This is, the place is called Amalfi, and Adam co-owned it, so we did live podcasts from the restaurant area where we built our own stage, and
they had their own special performing room upstairs, but you didn't often use that one.
We probably used that one once or twice. We always just
think
did
of at
it.
Least one show. Yeah. I think maybe two. I think of two of them.
I know. It was a weird venue, but at the same time, it was such a cool era looking back at it.
Hey, Adam, we built you a performing space in the attic. Oh, yeah, we're just going to perform here at the restaurant. Yeah. We built a booth. We're sliding it in. But we have people eating. Yeah, yeah, it's cool. Don't worry about it.
Is there anything more Corolla than that?
Yeah.
All right. Well, this one is fun because it features Lou Diamond Phillips joining Adam, Brian, and Allison.
Mm-hmm. This is Adam Carolla Show 1162. In 2013, Lou Diamond Phillips was in studio and did a live show. We played some of the in-studio portion. This is the live show. This is from September of 2013. Check it out.
And you guys tell me, what is more annoying sad or pathetic? The outgoing phone message or the recording on the phone message. The one that does the bad British accent in 2013.
Like Austin Powers?
Not Austin Powers, not Groovy Baby. Just,
it's someone trying to sound sophisticated?
They're just doing a British accent in 2013 on their, hello, you've reached the phone of, you know what I'm saying? It's 2013.
Right.
Okay. Like,
yeah.
I do remember.
2013, be American.
Well, no, what I'm saying is,
you cannot imagine how wrong you are.
Hold on. Hold on. When phone outgoing messages first began, we all had to have our fun. It was like when you had that first girlfriend. You know what I mean? I want to try, reverse cowgirl, and I'm going to mix some wheelbarrow in there. and I want to get this kerchief roll lubed up and worked into the mix. And now it's just like, let's just kind of grind on each other until something comes out of me.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
And she's like, how's that going to help the message?
No, what I'm saying is we all remember this message. Hello? Oh, hi. Hold on. Yeah? Gotcha.
Yeah.
Where you would talk into the thing, right?
Hello? Hello?
Right. We all got that.
The one where, I mean, I probably had the four albums worth of different songs that I left at the beginning because I would try different songs.
You put the music behind you. It'd start with a few beats of Belinda Carlisle and then right in to Alison Rosen, right?
I spent so much of my college doing the different outgoing message and then erasing it because I didn't sound breezy enough.
Right. But now it's 2013 and we're the bloom is off the goddamn rose. Lou Diamond Phillips, everybody. Come on up, buddy. I'll pose the question to Lou. Lou, more obnoxious on the outgoing message on somebody's phone machine. Like when you call someone's cell phone and you get the message. Fake British accent in 2013.
At least you know you're calling Madonna.
Yeah. Or the one that Mike August has, which is the big breath. I'm not in right now. You know the one you hear the big inhale at the top of the thing? Like it took them by surprise? What's that sadder and more pathetic, Lou? Fake inhale or fake British accent?
I'm going to go with the big inhale, but I think the one that has proven to be the most obnoxious of all is the fake, hello, hey, you there?
Just covered that.
Hey, guess what? I'm not really here. Leave a message.
I know. Well, by the way, why annoy every human being who calls you?
I know.
And what if there's some business, you know? What if it was between you and the other guy, and I'm calling you back, and I run Google, and I'm calling you back to tell you you got the gig, but I'm not in a good mood that day. I'm calling you first. I get the fucking obnoxious outgoing message, and I go, that's just enough for me to hang up and call the other guy and give him the nod, huh?
Think how many people have lost jobs
that's happened billions of times. Literally.
Yeah.
Billions of times. Lou,
yeah, I'm sure Brad Pitt's gotten a lot of jobs over me for that very reason.
Yes.
that's the only way I can explain
it. I am sure of it. I watched La Bamba last night.
Yeah. All right, okay, let's get it out of the way. Not my Richie!
All right,
get it out of your system.
It's insane that Richie Valens died at, what, 17?
17.
What the hell did you guys do at 17? I had done zero.
I hadn't died yet.
I was, oh, that's
true. At least you're still alive.
Would have been nice. I was like minus accomplishments at 17. Like I would have died and my family would have had to owe accomplishments if I died at 17. But there's a great, it's always stuck with me, and I don't know why it's always stuck with me, but I have this hypervigilance, but right before you do the La Bamba thing, you make a La Bamba face, like it's angry rock and roll face. It's a face with a purpose. It's a furled eyebrow. It's something. You know the face I'm talking about, where you go hello, hello, and then the La Bamba comes in, but it's like you're angry at the guitar.
It's a little Elvis. It's a little Mick Jagger.
Yeah, it's a little
maybe a little Bono pretension.
Something's going on.
You know,
in the eyes.
I was totally trying to.
Yeah.
You can't say here's a bit of a rattlesnake with cheer. You know, you can't be giddy about it. It's a bit of a rattlesnake. It just wouldn't have worked.
Yeah. Oh, is that the words? Is that what they're saying?
That's how I introduced the song. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I heard that.
You just saw yesterday, huh?
I had a little mangria. I had the sound down because it helps with my concentration. You know what I'm saying? Young Lou Diamond, very easy on the eyes.
Yeah.
Not so young Lou Diamond felt very easy on the eyes as well. Oh, man.
Hey, thank you. I'm an older but wiser gun.
What is your heritage? Where are you from? Where were you born? How'd you get here?
I was born in Subic Bay Naval Air Station, the Philippines.
Wow.
To a Navy father, yeah. I am half Filipino, but there's some Hawaiian, Spanish, Chinese in there. And I'm Scott Irish and Cherokee on my father's side. I play a lot of Native Americans, but fuck, they didn't call me for Braveheart. You know,
what
and
the
I'm,
hell?
Part Scott-Irish. I look great in a fucking kilt. Come on.
And it was weird because I was looking for you today, and I thought La Bamba came out before Stand and Deliver, and then I realized it said one was filmed earlier but came out later or something like that.
It's a bit of a misinformation there. No, La Bamba was filmed first in 86. Mm-hmm. I filmed Stand and Deliver in January of 87, February actually, because I did a Miami Vice.
Yes.
Right before
I read that as well.
And Viggo Mortensen was my partner. He dies in the first 5 minutes. Sorry, ladies. And Annette Bening was the girlfriend of the bad guy. So all
wow.
three of us, you know, in Miami
Pretty
Vice.
Good company.
I'm rocking a mullet, dude.
I told Lou Diamond, what do we call it? We'll call you Lou.
You can call me Lou. You can call me Lou Diamond, LDP. I noticed when we did the suit, they had to say all three names.
What do you think,
Lou Diamond Phillips?
We did the soups. What anniversary?
500.
500th show a couple of weeks ago, and I was telling Lou that just before Stand and Deliver, the movie about Edward James Olmos and Jaime Escalante, the teacher from South Central, who's recently passed, who was the hero, the big dude, and I can't recall the guy's
name. Will Gote.
It was Will Gote. Yeah, he was driving a Pinto, and I have had motorcycles towed three times in my life, which is, I think, a record. And I was pulled off of my motorcycle on Laurel Canyon, and I had the motorcycle towed because I didn't have a motorcycle license. And I was walking down Laurel Canyon back to my apartment on Laurel Canyon, and a big Samoan, could have passed for a Mexican dude, picked me up. I was hitchhiking, and he picked me up in his Pinto, and I said, "What's up?" And he said, "I'm going to be in a movie called Stand and Deliver in a few months."
He led with that. He was very proud.
He was very proud. And I said, "What's it about?" He said, "It's about a bunch of Mexican kids in like South Central." And I said, "What are you?" And he said, "I'm Hawaiian, but you know, we don't sweat the details over here in Hollywood." And we smoked some weed in a very straight way. And later on, we went out and saw an improv show. We had like a little mandate. And then I never saw the guy again.
I feel like that's really the best case scenario for hitchhiking, don't you? Like, you really lucked out.
When you have, the bottom is dismembered, left in a dumpster. That's the bottom, set on fire.
Statistically, you won the hitchhiking lottery.
Smoking weed with a guy who's going to co-star in one of the bigger movies of the year in another 4 months. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I hit the lottery. Now, I don't know what he's up to these days.
He actually...
Just picking up strangers.
Pretty much.
Getting high.
Pretty much. And the funny thing is the opening line is now, hey, did you ever see Stand and Deliver?
you know Adam Carolla? Yeah. I picked him up 27 years ago.
he got out of the business and he became a chef. And I don't know if any of you guys have ever eaten at Mastro's. I don't know if he's still there, but he was the head chef at Mastro's for a long time.
Wow.
He was grilling up some steaks, man.
I was just making fun of Mike August for
Buttery.
Eating the world's worst steak the night before we went to Mastro's before a show we did, like out in Calabasas.
How was Sizzlers?
It was literally... We had a conversation about going out to Mastro's for a steak for 3 weeks leading up into that night and including that afternoon. And then when I walked in on him in the back of the club we're at, he was finishing a steak. And I said, "How was it?" And he said, "It was horrible."
Yeah, Luke, worse than a steak at Sizzler is a steak at a comedy club.
Right. And then he ate the steak. And then we went to Mastro's, one of the best steakhouses in California, and he ordered sushi. I'm like, what the fuck is wrong with you? All right. So, Lou, I'm sorry. We'll give some modern day plugs as well because so far this stuff is just on old Ray.
It's okay because you know there are certain people out there who think I'm dead. So
not Joel McHale. And I'll tell you, this guy has acting chops and comedy acting chops as well. It's not just Richie Valens acting chops. the movie, Philly Brown, let's talk about that. Available on DVD, Blu-ray, video on demand, and Redbox. Good name for ASV. Tell us about it.
Philly Brown. It was a big hit at Sundance. I was really proud of him, man. Speaking of Stand and Deliver, it's the first time in 25 years that I've gotten back together with my old friend Edward James Olmos. He produced it. His son Michael directed it. Came out earlier this year in limited release. Did extremely well for a tiny little film that was made for like a nickel and a dime. And already Gina Rodriguez, who plays... I'm playing dads now, is the thing, see? And I went OG. I got the mustache. Orale, man. You know, the big tattoo across my chest, everything. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like my character from Stand and Deliver grew up and had kids. And Gina Rodriguez plays my daughter. She is Philly Brown. She's a rising MC in East L.A. And the late Jenny Rivera, God rest her, you know, she died in the plane crash. Boy, it's not a good thing to know
What plane crash are we talking about?
It's a plane... Jenny Rivera died in a plane crash in Mexico in December.
The Latin singer, I'm sorry.
Yes, the banda singer. Her only movie performance. She plays my wife.
Oh, that movie. Yeah.
Yes, that movie.
Yeah, she was like the older Selena or something. But she was a huge, huge Latin pop singer.
Major.
Bigger than we could imagine, and then
she was about to cross over in a huge way. But she's wonderful in the movie. Gina and I won Best Actor and Best Actress from the Imagen Awards. She took Best Actress at the Milan International Film Festival. I got Best Supporting Actor. So it's really a powerhouse of a little movie,
You can get it again. You can get it on. You can go to Amazon and pick it up.
Yeah, or it's on iTunes Movies. It's on demand. It's on DirecTV. It's I think it's on Netflix already. But yeah, it's
how's Edward James Olmos? Not so proud in real life, or super proud?
Oh no, he's very proud.
He's amazingly proud.
I wish I was proud.
How do you get proud? Where's the pride come from? I need that.
Change your shirt, maybe. I don't know.
It's my lucky shirt.
Ah, well, there you go. So you'd rather be lucky than proud.
I think you're born proud.
Yeah. Do you think he was a proud baby?
I think he was a proud little Pampers kid. Yeah, I do. I think he had that mustache, and he was the ruddy skin, and he was super proud when he was like 6 months old.
He has a middle name, too. That's strike two.
Oh, James. Yeah,
Excuse me.
Hey, yeah,
right,
Diamond.
Hey, you know what? Listen,
James,
you know.
That's what I mean.
We brown guys can't get away with, you know, like Tom Cruise or Brad Pitt. No, we have to have something that fills out a marquee so you'll see it.
You need a precious stone in the middle of your name. Something...
Like
something that has, an aesthetic application as well as an industrial application. That's right, like a diamond blade. All right, he'll cut through you like a diamond blade. Well, where'd the diamond come from? Is that on the birth certificate?
Yeah,
I know your last name's different, right?
Yeah, I was born Lou Diamond Upchurch. My biological father passed before I was very young, very old, I should say. And my stepfather's George Phillips, also in the Navy. And so the hence the Phillips.
Your mom like the man in a uniform.
And out of one.
Yeah. weird, but yeah. Yeah.
Me love you long time. It's weird when your mother says that.
Well, she does have to love her son for a long time.
Yeah.
It's just the context, I think, and the accent.
But the name Lou Diamond, it's actually my name, and I was named after men in the military tend to know this, especially the Marines. I was named after a very famous Marine, Sergeant Lou Ellen Diamond.
Wow.
But they called him Lou. He was Gunnery Sergeant Lou Diamond. He was kind of like an Audie Murphy of the Pacific Theater. Man's man. They told manly tales
Audie about Murphy him. Was a very famous hero from World War II, then went on to have kind of an action acting career, I guess, after that. But crazy... Purple Heart recipient and all that, and Congressional Medal of Honor. I don't know. Audie Murphy was incredibly decorated in World War II and then went on to act. This guy was more Vietnam era or
No, he was in World War II as well, but he was stationed in the Philippines, so you know, kind of a big legend around there. He was a mortar operator.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some, amazing story about him making a $100 bet, which in those days was, you know, ridiculous.
Sure.
That he
You know how many whores you could get back then for $100?
In the Philippines?
Yeah. Jesus Christ.
Sorry, Mom.
Like 250 whores.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that he would sink a this Japanese steamer that was coming into Manila Bay, and he got it in one mortar. So, you know.
That's the one where you just drop that thing into that huge bong, and you just goes, whoomp, and then pow, and then it's gone, and then there's some guy who's... I would be the world's worst spotter, because the guy'd be like, 2 degrees up, 2 degrees down, I'd be like, not your best, not your best. I know, where should we go? Anywhere but where we just went? Right. Should I go a couple degrees up or a couple degrees? Well, you should definitely do something, because you just killed a fucking pine cone, okay? Wow, that's bad. I told you she'll let me run the thing.
Could you be a little more specific? You're not being helpful.
Hold on. Wow, check out the rack on that nurse. Look at that. Boy, she's some... All right, I'll turn around. Yeah, what?
I need you to focus.
I'm focusing. I just saw where your last round dropped. You killed a llama. It's horrible.
Maybe if I had a better spotter, it wouldn't be a problem.
Well, listen. Oh, hold on. Let me look toward you. God, your skin looks horrible with these binoculars from 4 feet away. Oh, you're grotesque. You got to clean your pores. You got to exfoliate. I know we're in the jungle, but there's still no excuse for letting yourself go from a personal hygiene standpoint.
This is not germane to sniping at all.
Leave germane out of this. And by the way, when are we going to start integrating? Anyway, try again. I'll tell you how badly you fucked up.
Hey, fun fact, Lou won a celebrity cook-off on the Food Network. Is that like a hobby of yours, a passion of yours?
I was cooking just before I came in tonight. Yeah, I cook all the time, probably, I don't know, 4 or 5 nights a week. I won the first season of Rachel versus Guy. It's actually, my Filipino mother's very funny. I cook a lot, but you know, I'm the kind of guy who likes to have a little drinky poo, you know, and take my time cooking and, you know, chit-chat with my guests.
Sure.
So cooking, you know, fast is not my thing. And my mother, when she found out I was doing that show, she goes, "They are going to time you?" I said, "Yeah, Mom, they're going to time me." "Oh, Lou Diamond, time is your enemy." Yeah. So, I love it. And
you cookie long time.
I cooking long time. But exactly. But yeah, it's a real passion of mine. I actually just started writing a cookbook. So we'll see that sometime next year. I'm going to... Don't tell anyone. Oh, wait, this is going out like nationally.
Yeah.
I can't tell you.
Co-owner Tribeca Grill with, among others, Robert De Niro.
Anybody eat at the Tribeca Grill in New York? It's been there 20 years.
Yes.
Great place, isn't it?
Mike is eating there. Mike is eating off of every lunch truck in North America, by the way. That's how much he gets around. He actually bangs on the lunch trucks. Like, "Are you open yet?" "No." "Well, it's 5 in the morning. When are you guys open up?" "By the way, I got a whole parking lot to get to, so let's get going." He comes to the lunch trucks. He eats that much. He finds the ones that are up on blocks. So you won. What did you make?
I made, it was a 6-episode show, so I mean, I must have made a dozen dishes, 15 dishes, something like that. Mostly all my own recipes. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
And what would some of your specialties be?
I had to make one up on the spot, though, that was weird. I was going to do a lasagna, and Rachel Ray says, and I usually use turkey, ground turkey meat because of my kids, trying to, you know, be a little more lean, that kind of thing.
Sure.
But she goes, "Oh, no, you're going to cook with lamb."
And lamb?
I'd never cooked with lamb before, and so I did this lamb lasagna that has turned out to be absolutely brilliant.
Really?
Yeah. So that one went into the repertoire.
And
you know?
and how deep dish are you into this cookbook you're working on here?
Oh, I have about 1 page of the introduction started, so it's brand spanking new.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah.
You could be the next Gwyneth Paltrow.
I don't like the way you look at me when you say that.
I'm going to have another mangria. And then
oh, God,
gonna,
yes, so am I.
We're going to
so
talk.
I was going to tell you, too, though. Bobby De Niro is the guy who started the Tribeca Grill.
He's my partner, Bobby. There in New York, he called me up personally. He said, "Lou, me, Sean, Mikhail, maybe some other guys coming in. Are you interested?"
I mean, how could I say no?
No, you can't say no. I had a film that went to the Tribeca Film Festival a few years ago, and it was a really cool experience, really cool film. Everything was cool until I got back to the hotel, and everyone was sitting around in a big room eating, and the fucking DJ was just pumping the jams, and everyone was sitting, eating, and spitting on each other. You don't realize the combination of drinking, eating, and screaming at people that are next to you because the music is pumping so loud just means you get spat upon. Like, because you know when people get drunk and then they get sloppy and they're eating like finger food and they're drinking a margarita and they're like, hey! And they're like, just, everything is poo-poo and you're getting their breath and everything. Yeah. And I realized, I looked around, nobody was dancing, no one was on their feet, and I got up at some point and I told this jack-off, hey, could you turn it down a little bit? Because everyone's kind of trying to talk at the table and no one can hear each other. Yes, this is exactly what it was. Because every time you throw an event, you must pretend like there's a gaggle of 13-year-old girls with learning disorders and hearing impairments at this event. Whether it's a corporate event, whether it's the Tribeca Hotel with a bunch of 40-year-old people sitting around. Every event is just pump up the jams. And I said to this fucking dick wearing like his scarf and his tight shirt and his beret, you know, I said, you think you turn it down just a little bit? Because, you know, everyone's kind of trying to talk. And he's like, no. And I was like, well, do you see anyone dancing? Do you see anyone up on their feet? And he's like, no. And I said, good. Then turn it down a little. And he's like, no. And then I finally said to him, hey, dick, nobody likes your shitty music. And he said, I like it. And he turned it up. And I thought, oh, I want to find this guy's parents, and I never want to stop kicking them in the groin. I never want to stop. Never. Until my shoes is covered with blood. I never want to stop kicking them in the fucking groin. God damn, do I hate these fucking DJs. Can we get black folk DJing again? I feel like douchebag white guys, if just they just kick black folks. Black folks understood how to DJ.
Yeah, white guys have something to prove.
They have way too much to prove. Get them the fuck out of there.
But think, if they get out of DJing, then all of these douchey white guys are going to enter some workforce. Where will they end up?
I hope they do.
Ed Hardy stores.
Ed Hardy stores, yes. And I will not see them because I exclusively hang out at the Baby Gap. And that's all I want to say about it. That's just what I do. All right. We have questions out there, I do believe.
We
Paul
do.
Bryan has some out there.
First one's from Paladin Luboff. Is that pronouncing that right? Where is Paladin? Paladin?
We can By the way, Longmire.
Back there.
On A&E, I forgot to bring up for Lou as well. Just finished second season. How's your Mangria treating you, Lou?
It's manly.
Yeah.
I like it.
It packs a punch.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. I'll read out the question because we have no microphone for Paladin. He is from Los Angeles. He's having a bachelor party in November. 10 people, $1,000 budget. Any suggestions?
10 people, $1,000 budget. So that's $280 a person. Don't interrupt when I'm rolling, people. We can fix this in post if we have to, but right now I'm on a run. 10 people, $1,000 in Los Angeles. Is right? We got that right?
Yes.
Okay.
November.
All right. First things. All right. Now hold on. I'm getting up on my feet because I'm flummoxed. I'm fired up. Let's not treat this like it's somewhere between some fraternity hazing and a gang initiation. Let's not forget who's cock and balls is getting married in a few short days, and let's treat them accordingly. If somehow everyone's bachelor parties turn into some sort of cock and ball hazing, and I don't approve. I've been to bachelor parties where we ended up at the Queen Mary at a strip club on Ventura Boulevard with a bunch of he-she's and their junk tucked between their legs, like getting a dance in front of you. And it's like, look, it's not a novelty party. And when the stripper does show up, don't duct tape the guy down to the folding chair and then cover his junk with Cool Whip and then have the dog lap it up. You know, let him enjoy himself. When did we start torturing the bachelor? Something happened along the way. I don't know what happened.
I was unaware that this is what happens at bachelor
it
parties.
Does.
Oh, and the stripper handler is always like, fellas, hide those dollar bills. And you're like, there's one or maybe two places to hide a dollar bill on a man.
Right.
I don't want to party either one.
Yes, yes. So what I would suggest is I would suggest, and I don't know, there's got to be some sort of app that it's basically strip clubs that don't adhere to any rules. You know what I mean? Like, strip clubs are supposed to have rules, but there's certain strip clubs that guys know about that if you want to drive a little out of town, like to the city of industry, you can get more things done in the city of industry than you can in the city of Sherman Oaks, let's say.
More bang for your buck.
More bang for your buck.
They have drive-through strip clubs in the city of industry, don't they?
What's that?
Drive-through strip clubs.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Chick just dives right in through the sunroof. You roll up the windows, and you roll the car off an embankment. At some point, you orgasm when the car's cartwheeling down the embankment. And if it doesn't catch fire, it all goes well. If it does, then you died doing what you loved. Now, here's my whole point. Keep it simple. Just get your money, get your guys, get one sober. There's always one sober douchebag in the group. Are you pushing that guy? Is he the sober douche? Okay. And let me tell you what's fine. You don't make fun of a sober guy. You make fun of a sober guy if he says, I just don't like the taste of alcohol, or I feel out of control when I'm drunk. Then you tear him a new asshole. But if he was like, I clipped a special needs bus in a garbage truck I'd stolen after finishing off a 12-pack of Mickey's, and thus my license has been suspended for 21 years, then that guy's cool. Because he has an excuse.
Because that deserves respect.
That deserves respect. The, I don't like the way alcohol makes me act. That guy gets zero respect. Okay. So, you get one of those extendo vans, the kind that take you to the airport. You get the one sober dude to drive extendo van out to the city of industry, and you see what $100 a head. Good one, Ace Man. Can get done. All right. Thank you very much. Thanks, Lou.
Wait, how much question? Sex with someone besides the woman you're going to marry do you recommend for a bachelor?
It's not sex. It's like...
Or frittage.
Well, let's put it this way. You cook a lot. You'll get a nice piece of meat, and you do a nice dry rub on it.
Boy, that's...
You don't fuck it, but you rub it
pretty
good,
right?
That may
be the
right?
best metaphor I've
you
ever
get a
heard.
Nice...
Yeah,
you get a nice
you get
piece
your meat,
of beef,
you put your
you
dry
really
rub. You don't want to get it too wet.
Yeah, but you don't mount it. You just rub it in real good.
Okay. Where is this going to go?
I'm just saying.
It's going to end in a cream sauce, I believe.
A nice hollandaise. Yeah. You probably shouldn't have sex. Again, I'm not here to judge, you know. But... It definitely, let's focus on The Bachelor, and let's not, again, turn it into some sort of gang initiation where he gets the shit kicked out of him. You know what I mean? Let's have a good time.
Yeah, I actually heard talk of a potential skydiving bachelor party. Which...
I was at a bachelor party with a guy many years ago. The main bachelor went into the center of the room. He sat on a folding chair. They handcuffed him to the chair. They gave everybody a flashlight to, like, shine on him. They pulled his pants down.
It's like Sybil.
Yes. The chick did an erotic dance on him, but my buddy Ray took his flashlight and hit the guy in the cock. You don't give Ray a flashlight. He was 23.
You don't
know?
Invite Ray to a bachelor party.
Yeah, he just went up and whacked the guy's dick with the flashlight, and I thought, things have gone way too far here. All right, where were we? It used to be a chick jumped out of a birthday cake, and you went and fucked her in a closet.
In the good old days.
In the good old days. That's right.
If the budget's getting stretched for dinner, I recommend what I call the Mike August plan. You book dinner at Mastro's, but before you go, everyone gets a cheap steak beforehand and ruins their appetite.
Yeah, you go to the Canyon Club, and you do some carb loading. Yeah, no, you have the sober guy drive through in and out and do it on the way back when you're all shit-faced. It tastes that much better.
Question number two is from Cody Tucker from St. Louis. right here in front.
Cody Tucker, yeah.
Cody, I'll read your question, but you can embellish if you want. He wants to know, should he move to L.A., question mark. You've made me a little scared to consider it.
St. Louis. We like St. Louis, right, Mike? We were, I think we were in St. Louis, and I said to Mike when we were sitting at the bar at the hotel, I said, you know what the problem with writing books is? You write a book, someone pays you $14-15 for it on Amazon, they buy it, and then they hand it off to eight of their friends. The reason we got to get into this mangria is you buy a bottle for $18, you drink it, and if you want to give it to a friend, you got to buy another bottle. And just like that, chick ran up to me and went, hey, Adam Carolla, I just bought your book. I loved it. And I sent it to my sister in Atlanta. And I said, fuck you very much. Everyone does that with books, and they act like it's the greatest compliment they can give you, which is, hey, we paid $14, and 26 eyeballs are going to read it before you get a nickel. That's all I remember about St. Louis. Other than the Arch and what's his name, the announcer who lives in St. Louis?
Joe Buck?
No, Costas, Bob Costas, and Buck, too, but... I think this is a good thing. If you live in St. Louis, you're, you know, a few hours, 2-3 hours out of New York, and then the same with LA. Like, you're in the middle, right? Isn't it good to live in the middle? You're not. How far is it to everywhere? Where's Chicago from you?
45 minutes.
Yeah. Yeah, but I feel like everything is striking distance when you're there. Yeah.
How close is Branson?
Branson is like a couple hours north.
Yeah.
I'll tell you, we brought Yakov Smirnoff to you, though. He's next door. So, you know, you can save yourself the pilgrimage next summer. Yakov is coming to your town. So you're thinking about moving out here for business purposes?
Oh, there are no writers in L.A. Yeah, so you'll have an easy time of it.
Yeah. We need...
I just got a manager today.
Hey, congratulations.
But don't... Wait a minute.
First, How's my role? Is it good? Good.
All right, hold on. What?
Sorry, for the audience at home, he's a writer. He just got a manager. He's out here for meetings. He wants to know if he should move out.
And... There's a lot of shitty writers, but that didn't stop them from being employed, so that's the good news. Do you write comedy? No, you write... I feel like dramas... I could write drama. All I'd do with dramas, like, I just go back and forth. I'd say, here, Lou, we'll do it. I'll do drama.
All right, man.
Man, when you act this way, it's like, I don't even know you, dude.
I can't help it, man. I've got to do this.
You don't. Think about your family.
Think about my family. What about what I need?
Forget about what you need. It's always about you. What about me? It's always about you. First it was you, the football player. Then it was you, the pirate. That didn't work out.
I couldn't find myself, okay? Well, I'm not like you, the intellectual who knows it all.
Well, I found you, and I don't like what I've found. Scene. You see? A drama feels pretty easy. You know, like all those procedural shows where it's like, we got a kid missing. Well, we got 48 hours to get that kid back. All right, I'm going to go shake down the nanny. You guys, you hit every pawn shop within an 8-mile radius. Yeah. See what you find out. And then it's the same show, isn't it?
Yes.
Are they all kind of the same show?
Adam Carolla and Lou Diamond Phillips in NCIS, City of Industry.
Yeah. I'm going down to the Spearmint Rhino. I'm going to shake down some of those dancers.
Listen, you're a loose cannon, mister. Watch your P's and Q's.
Hey, listen, buddy. You weren't saying anything about my loose cannon when I got your ass out of a sling last weekend with those Nicaraguan drug dealers, were ya?
I've called one too many wives in tears. I don't want to do it again. Do you understand?
Listen, our CEO's going to lift both our shields. We don't bring this case home. Now, where's the water-soluble lube?
I got your back. Let's do this.
All right. And scene.
Did you notice? Let's Do This was in every single trailer of every movie this summer.
Right.
Let's Do This.
Yeah.
And then we start. Let's Do This.
We start marrying a lot of your mouth is writing checks. Your ass can't cash. We throw in that a little. I'm getting too old for this shit.
That's going to leave a mark.
That's going to leave a mark. And then there's rock and roll, lock and load. You know, there's maybe, by the way, I shouldn't have to explain to an experienced SEAL team or an experienced Ranger team, lock and load, gentlemen. Like, I figure, like, that's basic boot camp number. That's the first thing to learn, right?
Sir, we're all locked and loaded. We have been for half an hour.
Rock and roll, lock and load. There's that one. And then everyone does it. Like, well, what if they just attacked us moments earlier? We wouldn't have been ready at all. All right. Now, let's see. You're a cop on the edge. Yeah. I play your partner. And you just been divorced. You're going to throw it all away. But you're 2 weeks from retirement. I'm trying to talk you down. All right? I don't know where we are. You know where we are? We're on the roof. Ah, the roof of a building. By the way.
Is this sounding familiar to anything you've written?
In real life, when you try to get on a roof of a building, it's locked. But in every fucking movie, they're always on the roof. I had to get some air, man. I couldn't breathe down there. No, what's gotten into you lately, man? It's like I don't even know you anymore.
I'm having deja vu. I think you've said that to me before.
That was another movie, man. We're getting too old for this shit. It was another movie, too.
I got nothing else to live for, Captain.
What do you mean? Think your kids.
My kids? She took the kids. She took the house. She took my dachshund.
Hold on. Did you say dachshund like dog or Datsun like car?
Both.
She took the dachshund and the Datsun. That witch. What about your kids? You want them growing up without a dad? And what am I going to tell them when their dad's brains are splattered all over the sidewalk?
You know, it'd be a relief to them. I've missed so many softball games and spelling bees. They hate me. Don't you understand? They hate me. A bullet would be my best friend right about now.
Are you kidding? I talked to little Dakota the other day. She had tears in her eyes when she spoke of you. She said, you're too old for this shit. Then she said, lock and load, rock and roll, and she walked off. You kidding? Those kids idolize you, even if no one on this crew does. When I was a rookie, I looked up to you, man. I never had the heart to tell you in that locker room, but you were my hero. When you turned state's evidence on the department and they had to put you in protective custody, I looked at you as a hero.
I mistook that look in the locker room, I have to say.
It was homoerotic. I will agree with you. And maybe being nude and tumescent wasn't the best timing. But it wasn't sexual. It was a look of appreciation that one man can have for another without sex or with just the dusting of it.
You know what? I'll do it for us.
Now how about we get back down there and you make me some of that famous lamb-based lasagna.
Lock and load, rock and roll, rosemary and thyme.
You see, it's so easy. It's so easy. It's so easy. Thank you.
You guys are really pinging and ponging right there. This is just like the Elliot Gould episode.
And that was Lou Diamond Phillips hanging out live back in September 2013 from Amalfi. Man, that was a fun time. All right, we have one more clip for everybody. Get your pencils out, get your pads, and get ready to lock it in because we have a Rotten Tomatoes game.
They do spreadsheets on their computers, Chris. Please, come on. These are professionals.
That's
they
true.
Know way more actually, about this game than me or you.
I actually use a spreadsheet. That's funny.
If they've ever got access to it, they'd burn your house down.
Yeah.
Chris, this is not professional enough. We are very dedicated to this game. And they let us know every week, which we appreciate. Adam Carolla Show, 1597, John Taffer in this episode. This portion just Matt Achtie, Gina Grad, and Brian Bishop. It's from June of 2015. It's the 48th installment of the Rotten Tomatoes game. Matt Achtie back in studio. Check it out.
All right, let's do it. Let's play the game. We'll be right back.
name's the Flicks, and the gang makes Flicks mad at Jitty. He's a schlubby guy, and when he drops by, the gang has to guess. Do the critics scorch bacon, rotten or fresh? At Jitty.
All right. What are we doing now?
So, big show coming to HBO this weekend, second season of True Detective.
Oh, yes.
New storyline, new characters, one of which played by your new neighbor, Vince Vaughn.
Wow.
Yeah.
So, we're going to go with movies from the cast of season two of True Detective.
All right.
First movie is based on Colin Farrell. He was in a 2011 comedy called Horrible Bosses.
This is one of those. Jennifer Aniston must have more of these movies than anyone on the planet. Just a sort of in-betweeners, like, the movie's all right. She was all right. She didn't really need to be in it. She's done good stuff and bad stuff. And that's a sort of, I don't know. When I see Jennifer Aniston do these, I always go, why her?
As opposed to some other actress.
I don't know. Like, I feel like she has F you money for days. This feels like neither here nor there for her.
Didn't you think it was kind of a refreshing role for her? Because she's always such a goody-goody. Yeah.
Yeah, but she's done plenty of that. I mean, I just feel like... I don't know. I don't know what this movie... I know no one loved it. I get the feeling people didn't hate it. I think it was one of those movies where they thought of the title first.
The title was uninspired.
Good cast.
Solid cast.
I am going to say that the critics weren't in love with this thing, and for that reason, I'm going to give it 59%.
Ooh, I said 77. It's a pretty solid movie.
I said 68.
69.
Ooh! Yes. Back. Wow.
Back. All right. Well, the audience and the critics simpatico, just 1 point off in this particular one.
Never saw the second one.
Either.
No.
Yeah, you don't need to.
Okay.
All right.
All right, next up, a movie with Vince Vaughn teaming with Luke Wilson and Will Ferrell, Jeremy Piven, the bad guy in this, Old School from 2003.
Geez, been watching a lot of Wedding Crashers and not so much Old School. It's not on as much.
Old School, every bit as good, possibly better. Both good, both great, but Old School is fantastic.
Mm-hmm. Gary's shaking his head. So.
No, I completely agree with him. I just watched, yeah.
Old School. Yeah, it just doesn't come up as much on my cable. All right.
Blue, you're my boy!
I'm going to go... again, it's critics are never going to love this kind of movie, but it's funny. Can't deny that. I'm going to go with 77%.
I'm with 82%.
I think it was more of the people's movie than the critics' movie. I'm going 72.
60.
Oh,
damn.
Good girl. Why can't the critics get into this?
Fuck them.
60, it's fresh.
That's not, no. This is fresh.
All right.
Yeah,
this is a great
comedy. I fucking watched 20 minutes of Little Miss Sunshine last night. I didn't smile once. And I guarantee that's in the low 90s.
I'm disgusted now. This is a great movie.
Yes.
All right. Next up.
Let's be snobs about comedy just because they're broad. Matt, coach those guys up.
I will.
There's such a thing as broad comedy. Little Miss Sunshine, 91.
Next up, Rachel McAdams opposite Ryan Gosling in the romantic drama that put them on the map, The Notebook.
I have never seen this movie, and I have no desire to.
I've not seen it either.
Me neither.
Gina, I put this on the list for you.
Never do that. I don't like these kind of movies.
I think everyone loved this movie. This is the go-to chick flick. Don't watch this movie with your lady. You think you're doing yourself a favor. She's going to look at you the whole time going, look at you, you pile of shit. You'll never live up
to
this.
You'll never live up to Gosling.
Yeah. I'm going to say 89%.
I went lower. I said 72.
I'm going 81.
52.
Oh, shit.
Curse you, bitches.
But everybody was supposed to love this movie. Look at the audience.
85. This is a nonstop... A cavalcade of praise from every woman on the planet about this movie every time. I haven't seen it. I never even saw it. Really, I don't remember seeing a commercial for it. It's just every chick was like, oh, my God, the best.
You're right. All of a sudden, it was in the public consciousness. I don't know this coming out.
Of the millions of adaptations of Nicholas Sparks books, this is one of the better reviewed movies.
Really?
Yeah.
Was this movie 50% or
52? Yeah.
I get it, but I mean...
He's asking for opinion.
Little Miss Sunshine's in the 90s. We all know it's not that good.
52 is generous.
Really?
Oh. So good. I'm glad none of us saw it.
Ugh.
It was supposed to be epic inspiring and romantic.
I made the mistake of listening to women once. Over.
You shall not do it again.
Turn the page.
Fool me once.
Turn the page. Jesus Christ.
Wow.
89. Oh, fuck.
Good job.
All right. Next up, Taylor Kitsch is also in True Detective Season 2, and one of his bigger movies from a few years back, 2012 film, based on the board game Battleship.
Mm. They got him. You saw this?
Was it Rihanna in this?
Rihanna is in this, yes.
I had to watch it. I talked to Pete Berg while he was writing it.
And Liam Neeson.
Still never got a straight answer to the question of Pete Berg went out on a boat. I'm sort of friends with him. And I was talking to him. He's like, I'm going on a boat. I'm writing Battleship. I'm like, first off, okay, you don't have to write it from sea, you know.
He's got to surround himself in that environment.
Method writing.
Yeah, all right. So, number one. Number two, it doesn't have anything to do with the board game Battleship. And the answer is like, oh, yeah, we had to clear the name with or buy the name or license the name. And I'm like, but there is something called a Battleship that existed before the game Battleship, and it has nothing to do with this movie. The game has nothing to do with the movie.
But at any point, did somebody say, you sunk my Battleship?
I don't remember Rihanna saying that.
They say they won't sink my Battleship. And there's a scene where they call out the grid numbers.
Really?
Yeah,
that's
honest
kind of funny.
God.
Let me change my score real quick.
It's the craziest. But would you, Matt Atchity, would you license that from Hasbro or Kenner or whatever when it's just a movie like Maritimes? Like, hey, they're going to sea and they're going to fight alien force. Like,
it could be called aircraft carrier.
No, Hasbro has a long term plan to make movies out of their various properties.
Oh, so this is Hasbro. I don't. Anyway.
This Hasbro produced.
I'm confused.
No, we're going to get a Monopoly movie in a couple years.
My score might be generous.
Oh, looking forward to it.
I might have to cross mine out again.
I'm going to say... Damn it. All right, did you say something? I really didn't hear. I'm too caught up in people.
No, we haven't gone yet.
I'm going to say 14%.
Yeah, I lowered mine twice. I have 18.
I'm 12.
34.
No! What? What?
I had 25 written down.
I hate this movie. This game's
fucking my shit up today, man.
This game's great.
Wait, that didn't get that far from The Notebook. Like, really?
Yeah, I think this is a better movie than The Notebook.
Really?
Wow.
I mean, look, it's not great. This movie is stupid with two O's, okay? But what I will say is, boy, when they deliver that full broadside off the Battleship, like, it's kind of awesome.
Wow.
Right, but usually they don't get any critic points for kind of awesome. But anyway,
well, think of the nerds that are reviewing it.
All right, here we go.
It's more interesting than watching two guys actually play Battleship.
All right.
I'll give you that.
Mm-hmm.
Gets points for that. All right, next up, Kelly Riley, a actress from Ireland, is also in True Detective. You've seen her in Sherlock Holmes and the movie where she's the wife.
That one.
Yes.
Well, there's three to choose from.
Also, she played opposite Denzel Washington in Flight, which is the movie.
That movie is so incredible.
That's the movie you're guessing.
Oh, such a great movie.
Oh, Flight is the movie.
Yes.
Oh, Flight. Oh. Yeah, we should talk to John Taffer about it. The only thing that was dumb about that movie...
About Flight?
Yeah. Mm. Was that when you're an alcoholic, you have a drink. You drink. You like scotch. You like Dewars. Or you like vodka, or you have your drink.
Okay.
Alcoholics have their weapon of choice. He was constantly carrying around just piles of like rye, scotch, vodka, beer. Everclear beer. And listen, the guy, look, if you're an alcoholic, you're on a plane and all they have is Miller Lite, you'll have a Miller Lite. But at home, you got your drink.
You're iced.
Robert Zemeckis?
Yes.
Oh, that the crash sequence was pretty great.
That was awesome.
Yes. But besides getting that detail wrong, which I totally agree with you, don't you think it was an amazing movie about addiction?
No, I'm trying to think. I saw it at Phil Rosenthal's house. I love the crash. A lot of the story was there. The John Goodman stuff was a little weird to me. Like, I forgot about John Goodman. And there was the part where all the booze stuff was comically boozy. Like, it was like, we get he's an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. There's plenty of people that are alcoholics. There's a sort of quiet way to be an alcoholic, and then there's bottles strewn all over the room, and then, you know, spoiler alert, but when he drifts into the neighboring room and just butt fucks the mini fridge, like, had to throw bottles everywhere, yeah. Like, there's a way to drink it and then set it down.
Right.
You know,
you're kind
of
expecting, like, he's going to be sitting in the bathtub, like, bathing in it, right? Like, oh, that's what a real drunk
does. I wanted to say to Zemeckis, like, we get it. Yeah. He's an alcoholic. Yeah.
He established quite a bit throughout the movie.
From the beginning to the end, dial down the booze a little. Something you rarely hear me say.
I was going to say.
Especially with Taffer.
It's like
on
a
deck
long
over
look
there.
In the mirror when Carolla's telling you to dial back the booze.
There's a little something weird. I couldn't remember, like, his old lady getting a job working fast food, or his son he hadn't seen in a million. There's something corny about when he went back to his old house or something like that. There's some sort of weird sappiness in there. But other than that, it's kind of a lot of cool elements to it. I'm going to say...
I got mine written down.
I don't think the critics went nuts on this one. What do I care? I'm 158 points out of the running. I'm fucking 58 or 59. It makes a fucking difference.
Think it's that close?
59.
I want. This is the best actor nomination, right, for the Oscars?
If I remember correctly.
I'm going to say 82, which is probably too high, but I'll say 82.
I remember hearing a lot of people bitch about this movie, but I thought it was fairly acclaimed. I'm going 70.
77.
Yeah, weird. The audience has it just a tick lower.
Yeah,
that. I remember people. Oh, you know why people bitched about this movie? Because they built the shit up. They built the shit out of it, and the inverted plane on the commercial made everyone go insane. And everyone loves Denzel, and it was like, oh, this is going to be the greatest thing ever. And then we all saw it and went, eh.
And that was Act One, by the way.
That's right. Two more. That's why people freaked out.
Sadness.
Yeah.
Right.
All right.
Tally it up. Jesus, Gina Grant.
God.
You're feeling pretty good about yourself about now.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I'd like to thank God. I'd like to thank my mom. Oh, I'm so happy.
That's it? What about
That's
Dad?
He's a great guy. Throw him in there.
Not thankworthy.
Yeah, thanks,
Paul
Dad.
Paul Bryan, 73. Gina Grant, 69.
She was on 169?
She was doing real good.
I was really sad I couldn't use Wedding Crashers in this because Rachel McAdams and Vince Vaughn are in that, but we've done that in a previous game.
First world problems, Matt Atchie.
I know.
Ace Man at 100. All right. Rotten or fresh.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
Let's not live in the past.
And that was the Rotten Tomatoes game. Man, I missed that intro.
Yeah. I like that everything has its phase, though. I mean, there's certain podcasts I listen to, aside from the Adam Carolla Show, because it knows how to abbreviate its intro song, but we're like 10 years in, and they're still using the same theme song, and they play it every single time, and it's like, come on, guys. My favorite song I've maybe heard 27 times.
Yeah.
It's like, come on.
Well, that's my favorite part of Loveline is clocks.
Yeah. I hear that all the time from people. It's so funny, because that was like 14 months of the show.
Yeah, the Coldplay song. Man, that was an era.
That's their famous closer. But people are like, oh, I loved hearing clocks on Loveline. I listened to it for decades. It's like, no, that's a little bit of 2003, a little bit of 2004, and 2005. Like, that's when they use clocks. But it's again, like the SNL cast. Your favorite era of Loveline, if you say clocks, we know exactly when you were listening.
Very true. All right, that'll do it for Carolla Classics. The Adam Carolla Show returns tomorrow with a live podcast from San Antonio.
Oh, I can't wait.
I know. We'll see you there. And then Gio and I return later this week, so make sure to subscribe, tune in, and enjoy the clips that we got for you. So till then, my name is Chris Loxamana. That's Superfan Giovanni.
Mahalo, and get it on.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.